Chapter 26 Fire and Ice. Alan West and the team of scientists working on the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis established themselves as a formal research organization, the Comet Research Group, in 2015. The group, hereafter CRG, presently numbers 63 leading scientists from 55 universities in 16 countries. Many other scientists are also directly and indirectly associated as co-authors of papers written by CRG members. This is the case with a paper published in Nature's sister journal Scientific Reports on March 9, 2017, titled Widespread Platinum Anomaly Documented at the Younger Dryas Onset in North American Sedimentary Sequences. The lead author is geoarchaeologist and CRG member Dr. Christopher Moore of the University of South Carolina. His co-authors and fellow CRG members are geophysicist Alan West, whom we met in the last chapter, anthropologist Randolph Daniel of East Carolina University, archaeologist Albert Goodyear, whom we met in Chapter 6, earth scientist James P. Kennett of the University of California, geologist Kenneth B. Tankersley of the University of Cincinnati, and geologist Ted Bunch of Northern Arizona University. The non-CRG co-authors are planetary and atmospheric scientist Malcolm LeCompte of the University of South Carolina, geomorphologist Mark J. Brooks, also of the University of South Carolina, environmental scientist Terry A. Ferguson of Wofford College, South Carolina, geoscientist Andrew H. Ivester of the University of West Georgia, luminescence dating expert James K. Feathers of the University of Washington, and physicist Victor Ajeji of Elizabeth City State University. All in all, therefore, a very distinguished assembly of scientists. And the task that they set themselves was also in the finest tradition of good science, namely to test an important prediction made by other scientists. From the previous chapter, the listener will recall the research by Mikhail Pataev and his colleagues showing elevated levels of platinum in the Greenland ice cores over a 21-year period between 12,836 and 12,815 years ago. Pataev reports what appear to have been multiple injections of platinum-rich dust into the stratosphere over this period, and predicts that if the source of the dust was cometary, asteroidal, or meteoroidal, then the fallout should have extended far beyond Greenland and would be expected to result in a global platinum anomaly. The co-authors of the 2017 platinum paper chose North America, the suspected epicenter of the Younger Dryas cataclysm, and also their home turf, to test this prediction by establishing whether or not a platinum anomaly exists in terrestrial sediments of Younger Dryas age. That is similar to that reported from the GISP-2 ice core. It sounds low-key, but much was at stake. If soil samples showed platinum to be at normal background levels in the Younger Dryas boundary layer across North America, then Pataev's prediction would be false and the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis would suffer serious collateral damage. On the other hand, if elevated levels of platinum were found, it would vindicate Pataev and give further strong support to the hypothesis that cosmic impacts caused the Younger Dryas cataclysm. 11 archaeological sites, all with good stratification and well-established Younger Dryas age sediments, were selected as the focus of the study. 1. Arlington Canyon, Santa Rosa Island, California. 2. Murray Springs, Arizona. 3. Blackwater Draw, New Mexico. 4. Sheridan Cave, Ohio. 5. Squires Ridge, North Carolina. 6. Barber Creek, North Carolina. 7. Kolb, South Carolina. 8. Flamingo Bay, South Carolina. 9. Penn Point, South Carolina. 10. Topper, South Carolina. And 11. Johns Bay, South Carolina. The project began by testing soil samples from Arlington Canyon, Murray Springs, Blackwater Draw, and Sheridan Cave, four sites with particularly well-defined and well-dated Younger Dryas boundary age sediments containing peaks in Younger Dryas boundary impact-related proxies. What the tests revealed was a large above-background platinum anomaly at each site in the identical sample previously identified as the Younger Dryas boundary layer, containing abundance peaks in Younger Dryas boundary proxies, including microspherules, melt glass, and nanodiamonds. The team then extended the platinum analysis to soil samples from the seven other sites. In summary, across all 11 sites, they conclude that their results provide strong evidence for above-background enrichment in platinum within sediments that date to the onset of the Younger Dryas climate change at around 12,800 calendar years before the present. Platinum abundances from our study sites averaged 6.0 parts per billion, compared to background abundances above and below the Younger Dryas boundary layer, averaging 0.3 parts per billion. Average background platinum concentrations are all lower than crustal abundance of 0.5 parts per billion, whereas average Younger Dryas boundary concentrations are 12 times higher. These concentrations are also higher than the peak platinum concentration around 80 parts per trillion, or 0.1 parts per billion, reported at high chronological resolution from the GISP-2 ice core in Greenland by Bataev and his colleagues. All study sites contain significant platinum peaks that are around 3 to 66 times higher than in Greenland. The technical language makes it difficult to stay focused on the grave implications of all this. In a layer in the Earth that already contains abundant evidence of a cataclysmic cosmic impact around 12,800 years ago, a mass of new corroborative evidence has now been discovered. In parallel, the much greater strength of the platinum signal in the United States than in Greenland joins multiple other indicators pointing to North America as the most severely affected locus of the cataclysm. If this were a homicide investigation, in which the prosecution were hesitating to charge the suspect, new evidence of this quality would be decisive, and a winnable case could be brought to court. Moore and his colleagues are cautious and modest, however, claiming only that the consistent presence of anomalous platinum concentrations within sediments from multiple archaeological sites across North America that date to the onset of the Younger Dryas chronozone is compelling. This study finds no evidence to contradict the conclusions of Bataev and his colleagues that the Greenland platinum enrichment most likely resulted from an extraterrestrial source. In addition, our findings show no contradiction with the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis. After completing their own investigation, Moore and his colleagues combed the scientific literature for indications of how far beyond North America and Greenland the Younger Dryas boundary platinum anomaly extends. Though not central to any investigation prior to Bataev's, they found that platinum group elements had been discovered and mentioned in passing in other earlier studies of the Younger Dryas boundary at locations as far afield as Belgium, the Central Pacific, Venezuela, the southwest of England, and the Netherlands. Important information, hinting at a truly global picture that they hope may encourage further research. In the supplementary information to their main paper, Moore and his colleagues also provide detailed evidence ruling out either volcanic activity or processes in the mantle of the Earth as the sources for the enriched platinum at the Younger Dryas boundary. By contrast, after compiling geochemical data for 167 meteorites, including chondrites, achondrites, irons, and uralites, they found very high average platinum abundances, making all four classes of meteorites possible sources of Younger Dryas boundary platinum enrichment. They also note, if a platinum-rich meteorite or comet impacted Earth, the target rocks would have become a melted mix of meteoritic and terrestrial material, and so should be platinum enriched. The co-authors therefore compiled geochemical data from 86 examples of such impactites from three major impact layers spread out over a period of more than 2 billion years. In every one of them, they found elevated platinum abundances in a range including all the values in the platinum-rich Younger Dryas boundary layers from around 12,800 years ago. Following the trail of clues. The corroborating evidence keeps coming in. When we met at Murray Springs in October 2017, Alan West told me about new CRG research that had identified an extended episode of extreme windiness, dustiness, and large-scale biomass burning at the onset of the Younger Dryas. He mentioned that around 9% of the total biomass of the planet was on fire and destroyed within days or weeks of the Younger Dryas boundary. An astonishing statement, but I'd been so focused on other aspects of what he was saying that I hadn't really considered the implications. In February 2018, the Journal of Geology published the massive two-part study on which Allen's off-the-cuff remarks were based. The title speaks for itself. Extraordinary Biomass Burning Episode and Impact Winter, Triggered by the Younger Dryas Cosmic Impact around 12,800 years ago. CRG member Wendy Wolbach, Professor of Inorganic Chemistry, Geochemistry, and Analytical Chemistry at Chicago's DePaul University, led the study, in which she was joined by Alan West and 25 other top researchers. Confirmation of the figure of 9% of terrestrial biomass comes on the first page, with the calculation that this would have meant that plant matter, covering an area of no less than 10 million square kilometers, would have been consumed by the inferno. To imagine a world in which 10 million square kilometers of vegetation is in flames is to imagine a world in which an area roughly twice the size of the Amazon rainforest is burning. That would be about the same as the entire area of China, or the entire area of Europe, or the entire area of North America in flames. No matter how many separate wildfires there were, or how spread around the planet, a conflagration on this scale, hand in hand with the cascade of other disasters that marked the onset of the Younger Dryas, can only be described as hell on Earth. Once again, although records from lake sediments also provide vital clues, it is the Greenland ice cores, together with ice cores from other Arctic regions, that contain decisive evidence of the large-scale wildfires that raged across the world 12,800 years ago. This is not least because the upper, in other words, the most recent levels of these extremely long cores, contain the traces of biomass wildfires that occurred and were recorded in the historic period, thus allowing identification and calibration of specific combustion aerosols, notably oxalate, ammonium, nitrate, acetate, formate, and levoglucosan, that serve as distinct signals or proxies of biomass burning. Wherever an abundance of these combustion aerosols shows up in the ice cores, we can be certain that they mark the atmospheric fallout from extensive wildfires. We can date those wildfires, and it is often possible to identify where on the planet they occurred. Here are some important pieces of the Younger Dryas puzzle, winnowed from the dense pages of the 2018 paper. GISP-2 ice core, ammonium, a biomass burning proxy, displays one of the highest peaks in the 120,000-year record in an interval dating to 12,830 to 12,828 years ago. This overlaps the platinum-rich interval dating to 12,836 to 12,815 years ago and coincides with the onset of the Younger Dryas. NGRIP ice core, a single high ammonium peak traced to biomass burning across North America, begins at the Younger Dryas onset. It is the largest biomass burning episode from North American sources in the entire record. The GRIP concentrations of combustion aerosols begin to increase sharply around 12,816 years ago, correlating with the GISP-2 platinum anomaly, 12,836 to 12,815 years ago. At the onset of the Younger Dryas, concentrations of oxalate and formate reached their highest known concentrations in the 386,000-year core, with acetate abundances ranking among the highest in the entire core. These GRIP data reveal that massive wildfires occurred at the onset of the Younger Dryas, representing the most anomalous episode of biomass burning in at least 120,000 years, and possibly in the past 386,000 years. The Taylor Dome, Antarctica, ice core record, exhibits a small but distinct peak in nitrate that closely correlates with the Younger Dryas onset. The base of the Beluga, Siberia ice core exhibits a major peak in nitrate, indicating that a major episode of biomass burning occurred at the Younger Dryas onset. Several ice core sequences, GISP-2, NGRIP, GRIP, Taylor Dome, and Beluca, confirmed that the onset of the Younger Dryas was intimately associated with one of the highest and most pervasive late quaternary peaks in each of ammonium, nitrate, formate, oxalate, and acetate. These peaks occurred synchronously with the abrupt cooling and other climatic effects marking the onset of the Younger Dryas episode. Investigation of black mats at 19 sites in North America, Central America, Europe, and the Middle East show peak abundances of black carbon, soot, and other biomass-burning proxies were found in the Younger Dryas boundary layers. Concentrations of levoglucosan from within the black mat layer in Ohio were around 125 times higher than those in the layer below it, signaling a significant peak in biomass burning. Analysis of charcoal in lake sediments from 9 countries in South and Central America show one of the highest peaks in the record occurs at the Younger Dryas onset around 12,850 years ago. Analysis of charcoal in lake sediments from 7 countries across Asia reveal a conspicuous peak in mean charcoal abundances at around 12,950 years ago, plus or minus 225 years, followed by a sharp decline in biomass burning and then a peak at 12,400 years ago. A 24,000-year sequence recorded in a marine core from the Santa Barbara Basin off the coast of California exhibits the highest peak in biomass burning precisely at the onset of the Younger Dryas. This anomalously high peak correlates with intense biomass burning documented from the nearby Channel Islands. The peak also coincides with the extinction of pygmy mammoths on the islands and with the beginning of an apparent 600 to 800-year gap in the archaeological record, suggesting a sudden collapse in island human populations. A marine core from the Western Pacific, 1,500 kilometers north of Papua New Guinea, provides a biomass burning record spanning a period of 386,000 years. This core is unusual in providing a record not only of charcoal, but also of black carbon, which includes a siniform soot. The core exhibits a high black carbon peak spanning the period between 13,291 and 12,515 years ago, and overlapping the Younger Dryas onset at around 12,800 years ago. In addition, the Younger Dryas boundary peak in black carbon coincides with an above-average charcoal peak at around 12,750 years ago. Evidence from widely separated ice records and sediment records demonstrates that a major, widespread peak in biomass burning occurred on at least 4 continents at the warm to cold transition marking the Younger Dryas onset. This peak is synchronous with the cosmic impact layer at the Younger Dryas boundary as recorded by multiple impact-related proxies, including peak abundances of platinum, high-temperature microspherules, and melt glass. In summary, the Earth and all life upon it endured and was devastated by what can only be described as a globally distributed firestorm at the onset of the Younger Dryas around 12,800 years ago. In this planetary debacle, 10 million square kilometers of trees and other plant matter burned. To put that in perspective, the United Kingdom was in a state of traumatic shock in late June and early July 2018 after 4,942 acres of Lancashire moorland were consumed by wildfires. That's an area of just 20 square kilometers, but firefighters and emergency services from 7 counties were utterly overwhelmed by the blaze, and the military had to be brought in to assist. Meanwhile, a report in the Sacramento Bee, dated July 2, 2018, opined that California's wildfire season had started early, with 2 major fires already fought at huge expense and requiring evacuation of local residents. These 2 fires were estimated to have consumed 85,000 acres, which sounds an awful lot, but in fact converts to just 344 square kilometers. The previous year, 2017, was California's most destructive wildfire season then on record, with a total of 1.25 million acres burned. The cost of dealing with the disaster, including fire suppression, insurance, and recovery expenditures, was estimated at $180 billion, yet 1.38 million acres converts to just 5,585 square kilometers, an insignificant fraction around 0.05%, that is, a 20th of 1%, of the 10 million square kilometres destroyed in the Younger Dryas wildfires. It seems, therefore, that the United States and Britain, two of the world's wealthiest, most technologically advanced, and most powerful countries, face great difficulties in confronting what are, in the grand scheme of things, relatively minor wildfires. Imagine then the consequences for all living things of the great inferno that consumed 9% of the Earth's biomass around 12,800 years ago, and that left an indelible record of its climatic and atmospheric impact in lake sediments and Arctic ice. Impact winter. News footage of the US and UK summer wildfires shows smoke everywhere. Close up, it seems foggy or misty. In the longer view, there's an obvious gloom, a darkening of the skies, where the pall obscures incoming sunlight. It's a local effect, of course. 50 miles away, the air is clear, and the skies are blue. The 2018 Journal of Geology Study reports that matters would have been very different at the onset of the Younger Dryas, when the smoke from 10 million square kilometres of burning biomass would have enshrouded the entire Earth, creating what Wendy Walbach and her co-authors describe as an impact winter. This is a concept derived directly from research in the early 1980s, revealing previously unexpected consequences of a nuclear war in the form of a nuclear winter. The findings of that research were first put before the public in October 1983 in an article by esteemed astrophysicist Carl Sagan under the headline, "In a Nuclear Exchange, More Than a Billion People Would Instantly Be Killed, But the Long-Term Consequences Could Be Much Worse." Appearing in a mass circulation magazine, Sagan's article showed that the immense quantities of dust and smoke arising from multiple nuclear explosions and from the wildfires they sparked off would significantly reduce the amount of sunlight reaching the surface of the Earth, causing a steep and sustained fall in global temperatures, widespread failure of crops, and devastating famines. Nor would a full-scale war between superpowers be required to bring on the terrible and potentially terminal consequences of a nuclear winter. Even a regional nuclear conflict could do it. "We have placed our civilization and our species in jeopardy," Sagan concluded. In the case of the Younger Dryas, the jeopardy that humanity faced was not from nuclear missiles, but from the incoming fragments of a disintegrating giant comet traveling at tens of kilometers per second, with the larger fragments as deadly as hundreds of nuclear warheads. Indeed, it is estimated that the total explosive power of the comet fragments that struck the Earth in repeated episodes over a period of 21 years some 12,800 years ago would have been of the order of 10 million megatons, 1,000 times greater than all the nuclear devices stockpiled in the world today. The Younger Dryas is already recognized as an epoch of extreme anomalous cold that lasted for approximately 1,200 years, setting in fast and suddenly around 12,800 years ago and ending equally suddenly around 11,600 years ago. The Journal of Geology Study greatly enriches this picture with compelling new evidence that the onset of this 1,200-year deep freeze was marked by a brief period of extremely intense and large-scale wildfires triggered by the radiant and thermal energy from multiple explosions as fragments from the comet swarm pelted the Earth. This widespread biomass burning generated large amounts of long-lived, persistent, acidiform carbon soot that blocked nearly all sunlight, rapidly triggering an impact winter that transitioned into the Younger Dryas cool episode. The negative effects of acidiform carbon soot might have persisted for 6 weeks or more at the Younger Dryas onset, blocking all sunlight and causing rapid cooling. Reduced insulation is also expected from the injection of comet dust to the upper atmosphere. If so, the lack of sunlight would have had widespread and catastrophic biotic effects, including insufficient light for plant photosynthesis and growth. At the same time, North Atlantic deep water formations ceased, thus throttling the so-called ocean conveyor and triggering a sustained decrease in near global temperatures. The mammoth in the room. It has long been understood that an interruption of the warm Atlantic current known as the Gulf Stream correlates with Younger Dryas cooling, and it is generally agreed that a great gush of cold, fresh water derived from the melting Laurentide ice sheet swept across the surface of the North Atlantic. It prevented warm, salty water from the Southern Ocean flowing deep below the surface, the Gulf Stream, from rising to the surface. The normal overturning of the ocean water stopped. As a consequence, the atmosphere of the ocean, which would normally have been warmed, remained cold, and so, in consequence, did the air over Europe and North America. It's revealing, looking back through the scientific literature, to see how long explanations of this sort were simply taken for granted. That there had been a cold water flood was not in doubt, so the detective work that at first interested scientists most was where had all the water come from? The listener will recall that the North American ice cap had two distinct segments consisting of two separate ice sheets, the Cordilleran in the west and the Laurentide in the east, which were often joined, but which in the later stages of the Ice Age were separated by the famous ice-free corridor, that for a long while was erroneously believed to have been the sole route for human migration into the Americas. Along the southern margins of these ice sheets, enormous glacial lakes formed and were prone to flooding, most famously Glacial Lake Missoula in the west and Glacial Lake Agassiz in the east. Floodwaters out of Lake Missoula would have had no access to the Atlantic Ocean. They would have been routed into the Pacific. Lake Agassiz was therefore thought to be the most likely source, and a study published in Geology in January 2018 confirms that its floodwaters could have been routed eastward to the North Atlantic at the Younger Dryas onset and caused the canonical abrupt climate shift. So we know that a cold water flood poured into the Atlantic Ocean around 12,800 years ago, on a scale sufficient to stop the Gulf Stream in its tracks. We know that Glacial Lake Agassiz has been implicated in it, and we know that this great gush of cold, fresh water has been connected to the plunge in global temperature, the deep freeze, that defines the Younger Dryas cold event. The issue that most of the scientists are skirting, however, the mammoth in the room, is why such a flood would have occurred at the onset of the Younger Dryas deep freeze around 12,800 years ago, rather say than 800 or 1,000 years earlier, at the height of the warm phase, known as the Bolling-Alarod interstadial, that immediately preceded the Younger Dryas. Intuitively, one feels that meltwater floods should have been at their peak during the warming phase. Why, therefore, in this case only, do we see them at the onset of an extremely cold phase? I raised this problem in Magicians of the Gods in 2015, and it is raised again by Warbatch and her colleagues in their 2018 paper, where they present evidence that deepens the mystery. Unlike for typical warm-to-cold climate transitions, they report, global sea levels rose up to 2 to 4 meters within a few decades or less at the Younger Dryas onset, as recorded in coral reefs in the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. The point is understated, but this is a very big deal. 2 to 4 meters of global sea level rise within a few decades or less of the onset of the Younger Dryas is an immense amount of water, a cataclysmic world flood by any standard. What makes it all the more remarkable, however, and all the more puzzling, is the evidence from Walbatch's study that in the exact same period the planet suffered a spectacular episode of biomass burning and an associated impact winter that caused warm interglacial temperatures to abruptly fall to cold, near glacial levels, within less than a year, possibly in as little as 3 months. Meanwhile, in the process of absorbing that sudden massive flood of icy water into the North Atlantic, the world ocean had reacted by shutting off the Gulf Stream, thus sustaining freezing temperatures in Europe and North America, and setting in process the entire Younger Dryas cold episode. What we are looking for, therefore, is an agent capable simultaneously and almost instantaneously of bringing about all of the following. A global flood, wildfires across an area of 10 million square kilometers, 6 months of icy darkness followed by more than 1,000 years of glacially cold weather, a stratum of soil across more than 50 million square kilometers, dated to the Younger Dryas boundary and infused with a cocktail of nanodiamonds, high-temperature iron-rich spherules, glassy silica-rich spherules, melt glass, platinum, iridium, osmium, and other exotic materials. A mass extinction of megafauna. Warbatch and her colleagues are forthright in their conclusions. Multiple lines of ice core evidence appear synchronous, and this synchronicity of multiple events makes the Younger Dryas interval one of the most unusual climate episodes in the entire Quaternary record. A cosmic impact is the only known event capable of simultaneously producing the collective evidence. A violent hurricane of bolides. What kind of cosmic impact? From quite early in the research, since the first strong impact proxy evidence was analyzed, it's been the consensus view of CRG members that the agent responsible for the Younger Dryas cataclysm was a comet. Wolbach's study strengthens that position, noting comets are a compositionally variable mix of volatile ices, meteoritic material, and pre-solar dust. Wide ranges of elemental ratios confirm that cometary material is heterogeneous, similar to the Younger Dryas boundary samples. Although the type of Younger Dryas boundary impactor remains unclear, the current evidence does not support any specific meteoritic type as a source. Instead, the broad extent of biomass burning at the Younger Dryas onset is more consistent with Earth's collision with a fragmented comet, resulting in a violent hurricane of bolides that detonated above and or collided with land, ice sheets and oceans across at least 4 continents in the northern and southern hemispheres. This scenario, the study argues, explains all the anomalous and synchronous evidence. Vaporization of cometary materials and platinum group element-rich target rocks injected platinum, iridium, osmium, and other heavy metals into the stratosphere, accompanied by impact-related nanodiamonds, melt glass, and microspherules. Airburst fireballs and the ejection of molten rocks triggered many individual wildfires over wide areas, producing one of the largest concentrations of combustion aerosols deposited in the Greenland ice sheet during the past 120,000 to 368,000 years. In the higher mid-latitudes, atmospheric and oceanic temperatures abruptly decreased from warm interglacial to near-glacial conditions within a few months to a year. Atmospheric and cometary dust, along with a cineform carbon soot, triggered the rapid onset of an impact winter. This blocking of sunlight led to a die-off of vegetation. Damage to the ozone layer likely led to an increase in ultraviolet B radiation reaching Earth's surface, damaging flora and fauna. Increases in nitrogen compounds, sulfates, dust, soot, and other toxic chemicals from the impact and widespread wildfires likely led to an increase in acid rain. Increased production of organic matter and burn products from environmental degradation and biomass burning contributed to algal blooms and the subsequent formation of widespread black mats. In my view, however, by far the most significant finding of the study, fitting perfectly with the scenario of a disintegrating comet, is the impact event destabilized the ice sheet margins, causing extensive iceberg calving into the Arctic and North Atlantic oceans. The airburst impacts collapsed multiple ice dams of proglacial lakes along the ice sheet margins, producing extensive meltwater flooding into the Arctic and North Atlantic oceans. Destabilization of the ice sheet also may have triggered extensive subglacial ice sheet flooding, leaving widespread flood-related landforms across large parts of Canada. The massive outflow of proglacial lake waters, ice sheet meltwater, and icebergs into the Arctic and North Atlantic oceans caused rerouting of oceanic thermohaline circulation through climatic feedbacks. This, in turn, led to the Younger Dryas cool episode. In other words, the long-established and widely accepted evidence linking the onset of the Younger Dryas cold interval to a freshwater flood off the North American ice cap and consequent changes in oceanic circulation is fully accepted by Wolbach. What she and her co-authors add, however, is an additional key element, suggesting that these climate-changing mechanisms did not occur randomly, but rather were triggered by the Younger Dryas boundary impact event. After shutdown of the ocean conveyor, the Younger Dryas episode persisted, not because of continued airburst impacts, but because once circulation stopped, feedback loops and inertia within the ocean system maintained the changed state of circulation until it reverted to its previous state. Indeed so. No one is suggesting that impacts and airbursts continued throughout the entire 1,200 years of the Younger Dryas cold interval. Wolbach and her colleagues leave us in no doubt that their study is focused on the beginning of that interval, and specifically on the sudden and mysterious climatic reversal from warm to cold around 12,800 years ago that they attribute to an impact event. They remind us at several points in their Journal of Geology paper, however, that when they speak of an event, they do not mean to imply a one-off hurricane of bolides striking the Earth over a single day or two in a single year. What the evidence points to instead is a series of such brief but deadly encounters recurring biannually over the full period of 21 years of platinum enrichment identified in the Greenland ice cores. Many of the individual impactors would have been Tunguska meteor size or smaller, but they would have come in vast swarms capable of doing enormous damage, and there is evidence that at least once during these 21 years, the biannual hurricane of bolides may have contained comet fragments with diameters of a kilometer or more. This is what was specifically proposed in the very first scientific paper to outline the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis, co-authored by Wendy Wolbach, Richard Firestone, Alan West, and more than 20 others, and published in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in October 2007. It raised the possibility that multiple 2-kilometer objects struck the 2-kilometer-thick Laurentide ice sheet. Subsequently, in September 2013, Yingxie Wu, Mukul Sharma, and others drew attention to the Gulf of St. Lawrence, Canada, where a submerged impact crater with a diameter of 4 kilometers, the Coruscant crater, has been dated to the Younger Dryas boundary. Looking at a range of other evidence, they concluded that there had been multiple impacts in this region that were closely associated in time. Separately, Richard Firestone and Alan West reported evidence of an airburst at the Younger Dryas boundary near the Great Lakes of an object unusually enriched in titanium and other incompatible elements. Terrestrial-like ejecta fell close to an impact site near Gainey, while projectile-rich ejecta fell much further away. High water content in the ejecta favors an airburst over the Laurentide ice sheet north of Gainey. Now perhaps we are getting closer to an explanation of how a single cause could account both for plunging the Earth into a 1,000-year deep freeze and for melting sufficient quantities of glacial ice to raise global sea level by up to 4 meters. The immense meltwater pulse that entered the North Atlantic and Arctic oceans was, of course, not the result of anomalous global warming in an epoch of global cooling, but a direct consequence of the destabilization of the ice sheet by impacts and airbursts of multiple comet fragments, indeed, of a swarm of comets. The thermal energy and blast wave radiated out southward beyond the ice margin all across North America, accompanied by additional local airbursts and impacts that set immense areas of the continent's primeval conifer forests ablaze, followed by aerial detonations or ground impacts by numerous relatively small cometary fragments widely dispersed across several continents. Wolbach and her colleagues looked into a series of 7 episodes of meltwater release that occurred during the Ice Age, of which the Younger Dryas was the last. Named Heinrich events after Hartmut Heinrich, the marine geologist who first identified them, such episodes are distinguished by massive armadas of icebergs carving off the continental glaciers. These icebergs carry rocks, rubble, and other debris that, as the bergs melt, are deposited on the ocean floor where geologists can identify them, measure them, and derive estimates of scale and chronology. It's therefore notable that even though the Younger Dryas is considered a Heinrich event, designated Heinrich Zero, The anomalously high peak in wildfire activity at the Younger Dryas onset is completely opposite to that of six previous Heinrich events, which showed low levels of biomass burning. This is a crucial observation. The presence of high peaks in biomass burning at the Younger Dryas onset is completely contrary to the very low levels of biomass burning observed at previous similar climatic transitions, making the Younger Dryas climate episode highly anomalous and unexplainable by the natural processes that created previous warm to cold transitions. Again, the hypothesis of repeated encounters with the fragments of a disintegrating comet over the 21 years from 12,836 to 12,815 years ago provides a straightforward explanation for this apparently anomalous state of affairs. The Younger Dryas Heinrich event was not triggered by normal climatic changes, but by the impacts of comet fragments on the North American ice cap. We cannot say exactly when, within that 21-year period, the impact-related destabilization of the ice cap occurred. It might have been right at the beginning, or right at the end, or somewhere in the middle, and it might have happened more than once. What the data from the Greenland ice cores definitively do indicate, however, as we heard in the previous chapter, is that the ferocity and intensity of the bombardment, with its accompanying rain of platinum, increased year on year for the first 14 years, reached a peak around 12,822 years ago, and then declined over the next 7 years until ceasing as abruptly as it had begun. It's a good guess, therefore, nothing more scientific than that, that the peak of the comet's interaction with the North American ice cap, and most likely the time when the really big fragments came in, would be around 12,822 years ago. Alan West and fellow CRG scientist Richard Firestone think as many as 8 such kilometer-scale fragments may have struck the ice cap, excavating their craters in the 2-kilometer-deep ice that subsequently melted away, leaving little or no permanent trace on the ground beneath, or leaving craters that are hard to find, for example, 4 suspiciously deep holes in Lake Superior, Michigan, Huron, and Ontario. Encounters with any fragments of this size, let alone multiple fragments, would already constitute a planetary disaster on an almost unimaginable scale, wherever they occurred. What we must keep in mind, however, although North America was the epicenter, is that the terrible impacts experienced there were only part of a much wider event that left a trail of devastation across at least 3 other continents. What was lost? Extinctions of animal species took place all around the world at the onset of the Younger Dryas, but were particularly fast, savage, and severe in North America, where 35 genera of large mammals were wiped out. Offering evidence from 73 sites across 23 U.S. states, Walbach et al. Document the synchronicity of these megafaunal extinctions with the Younger Dryas impact. 3 examples, one of which, Murray Springs, was the subject of the last chapter, can stand for the rest. Blackwater Draw, New Mexico. At this site, a distinctive black mat layer, dating to the onset of Younger Dryas climate change, is in direct contact with peaks in magnetic spherules, platinum, iridium, and biomass-burning proxies, including charcoal, glass-like carbon, fullerenes, and polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. These proxies are draped conformably over the last known bones of mammoths killed by Clovis hunters, who then abandoned the site for hundreds of years. The evidence from Blackwater Draw suggests that the Younger Dryas boundary impact is coeval with the megafaunal extinctions and a human population decline, along with a peak in biomass burning and with Younger Dryas climate change. Murray Springs, Arizona. Peaks in magnetic spherules, melt glass, nanodiamonds, platinum, and iridium are located immediately beneath a distinctive black mat that dates to the Younger Dryas onset. Peaks in Younger Dryas boundary biomass burning proxies include charcoal, carbon spherules, glass-like carbon, aciniform carbon soot, fullerenes, and polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. At this site, several mammoths were killed by Clovis hunters, after which the black mat formed atop the bones and humans abandoned the site for around 1,000 years. Thus, the evidence supports the synchronicity of the Younger Dryas boundary impact event, increased biomass burning, Younger Dryas climate change, megafaunal extinctions, and a major human population decline. Sheridan Cave, Ohio. There are Younger Dryas boundary peaks in magnetic spherules, melt glass, nanodiamonds, platinum, and iridium. A charcoal-rich black mat dates to the Younger Dryas onset and contains peak abundances of charcoal, acidiform carbon soot, carbon spherules, and nanodiamonds that are closely associated with the last known Clovis artifacts in the cave. The black mat layer is in direct contact with the wildfire-charred bones of two megamammals, the flat-headed peccary and the giant beaver, that are the last known examples anywhere in the world of those extinct species. Horses, camels, mammoths, mastodons, giant ground sloths, saber-toothed tigers, short-faced bears, and direwolves are among the other iconic creatures of the Ice Age that disappear from the record at this time. This represents a major extinction, James Kennett and Alan West remind us in a paper published in 2018 by the Florida Museum of Natural History, not only because so many large and well-known animals were lost, but also because many of the extinct taxa had resided for millions of years in North America. Horse evolution had continued without a break in North America since the Eocene, around 55 million years ago, with the only known absence beginning at around 12,800 years ago until their return from Europe around 500 years ago. Clearly, such extinctions are highly anomalous. All in all, Kennett and West conclude, sufficient geologic and chronologic data now exists to support the hypothesis that megafaunal extinctions were caused by continental-scale ecosystem disruption resulting from the cosmic impact at the onset of the Younger Dryas. The megafaunal extinction would not have occurred at or close to the Younger Dryas onset without the Younger Dryas boundary cosmic impact at around 12,800 years ago. Instead, many of the now extinct animals would have survived much longer, even to modern times. The archaeological evidence is scarce, perhaps precisely because so much was swept away and covered over by the Younger Dryas earth changes. Nonetheless, it's clear that along with the disruption of animal life in North America, the cataclysm also had severe consequences for human beings. Top of the list, of course, is the abrupt, mysterious disappearance of the entire, successful, technically accomplished, and geographically widespread Clovis culture right around 12,800 years ago. Then, in the centuries following, if we take the case of the Southeast as an example, we see a sudden, anomalous 50% drop in the numbers of projectile points being made. A similar trend is seen in many other parts of North America at the same time. And in California, there's evidence of a cessation of human activity between roughly 12,800 years ago and 12,200 years ago. A study of almost 700 cultural carbon-14 dates from across North America by David Anderson, Albert Goodyear, and others shows a rapid decline in human activities at the beginning of the Younger Dryas that reached its lowest level early in the Younger Dryas, a 200-year-long 80% decline in the number of cultural carbon-14 dates, implying a major decrease in population, followed by a gradual rebound for around 900 years. We do not possess a time machine. We cannot place ourselves physically in North America 12,800 years ago. But all the evidence suggests the continent passed through a tremendous, earth-shaking cataclysm, and we know that at least one ancestral North American culture, Clovis, became every bit as extinct 12,800 years ago as the mammoths and the direwolves. What else went the way of Clovis in that time of burning darkness and icy floods?